All right. This is number four for me, but I'm super excited because, look, Windows is pretty exciting nowadays.
Absolutely.
Not only are we putting out some awesome sort of hardware, like mm-hmm. that Surface Studio is beautiful. The Dial is amazing. Mm-hmm. The sort of laptops we're putting out are beautiful, that do things that nobody else does. But now for the developer, there's even some awesome things that we're doing. But before we do that, let's get started. Let's introduce ourselves and remind everyone that if you want to ask questions, please ask them below. We are super excited about all the questions you have. Get those in early, get those in often, so we can get them in. All right, why don't you introduce yourself, Kevin?
I'm Kevin Gallo. I'm Corporate Vice President for the Developer Platform. I'm responsible for the APIs and tools to build applications for Windows.
Awesome.
I'm Mazhar Mohammed. I'm the Director of Developer and Partner Services in the Store team.
Awesome.
I'm Dave Aulis. I am Group Program Manager of the team that makes the Windows Map application and then the Windows Map platform.
Awesome. So I'm sure before we get started with all the questions that are going to be coming in, obviously, I'm sure you get asked a set of questions to start. I mean, people are probably asking me the same thing every day. You know, it's like support. Have you tried turning it off and on again? You know, we always start, let's just get those out of the way initially so that if people have questions that are more in depth, we can ask them. So let's start with you, Kevin.
Sure. I guess there's like three questions I typically get asked. First, why build for UWP? What's the value proposition for UWP? And typically, you know, there's lots of answers, but the two that always resonate really well with me and with customers is, one, it gives you access to all of the Windows devices. So whether this is your HoloLens, your Xbox, your, you know, your Surface Studio, all of these devices, you can build applications that go and work across all of them using the same tools, the same run platform, the same set of capabilities and technologies. It also, the next one really is, okay, now that I can go hit all those, I can also light up all these great new input types, you know, where I have the Dial I can go use, I can have, you know, pen, ink, I can have speech, I can use Cortana. There's all this great new innovation in our GUI stack, our user input, as well as being able to build great user experiences with the great toolkit and adapt it to, you know, building a tailored custom experience for the experience on that individual device. The next question is, hey, can I really build a great desktop app? Or is this really just for kind of the intersection, you know, for what's common among all the devices? And for me, it really is about being able to build out the best of every device. So absolutely, you can build an application that is better than anything else on a desktop. And sure, there's been some gaps in the past, and I'll acknowledge some of those, where when we first started out, you really could only build something that was more in common. We've been expanding the surface area. So you can really build that high quality application for a desktop or, you know, for Surface Studio, even for HoloLens. And then the other one is we've also introduced Centennial, which allows you to leverage all of your desktop's code. So as you're building a great desktop application, you can not just have to start from scratch. That's not typically what developers want to do, but they want to be able to leverage a current existing desktop app and move forward and use the code from the Universal Windows platform. And now you can do that both. We've talked about that,
yeah,
I think,
absolutely.
Before. And the next one is, hey, you don't just live in a microcosm. I also need to look at all the devices and reach my customers on whatever device it is. How do I go do something cross-platform? And I think you've heard a lot about that already, which is about one of the things, if you are a .NET developer, you can leverage that by using Xamarin for iOS and Android, of course, UWP on Windows, and even, you know, share that code with Windows 7 by using something like WPF or WinForms. And so you really can go and share that across, you know, all of the different code bases using .NET. We also have something we've introduced called Project Roam, which allows you to not only build client tech, but connect up your users across your entire device graph. And so you can now build an application that knows about all the devices in a user's world and life and take advantage of those and kind of build synergetic experiences across them all.
And that's kind of cool, right? Because, I mean, everyone has more than one device nowadays. I mean, they have their laptop, they have their phone, they have their other thing, they have their other thing. I love the idea of being able with Project Roam to tailor that experience. So not only is it just the same, because people just do the same, but now you can tailor that experience with the form factor.
And you can use the right device for the right task, and you can use two devices, one for one part of the task and another device for another one. And I think that's really important, as we always want to use the best tool for the task at hand.
All right, let's switch to the store, Mazhar. So, I mean, I know you folks put out stuff all the time. All the time. So can you sort of get us caught up with some of the cool things that you've come up with since we last time, I believe, which was at Build?
Sure. So one of the things we did with the store was we made the store client behave like an application. So that really allowed us to update the store client in the same way that we would update any other app. And we do the same thing with the Dev Center. We iterate on at least a monthly cadence where we ship new functionality all the time. So recently on the store, in general, what we've been doing is we've been giving users more and more reasons to come to the store. We're adding new kinds of content. We have Centennial apps. We have Edge extensions. We have high-value AAA games coming to the store. And so users have more and more reasons to come to the store. And when they do come to the store, we want to make sure they have the best experience. So we have been investing in just the look and feel of the store, making it more beautiful, a more inviting place for consumers. The product description pages have become a lot more richer. You have video, you have background videos, you have video trailers, you have trailers and trials and so on and so forth. And then, you know, when users are ready and they're ready to purchase the application, we've been investing in reducing the friction for the users to get an MSA so that they can actually acquire the application, or making it easier. We count every click that the user makes from when they land to on the store to the point when they've actually acquired the application. And similarly, we've been making investments on the Dev Center side. We've been making usability investments so that as developers onboard with us, they have a clean, friction-free experience. And the landing page and the dashboard is more visible, and you have, you know, higher density data in the dashboard. And then, you know, as developers onboard, we want to make sure that they're able to acquire, engage, and monetize their users. So we've been investing in primitives for monetization, for user acquisition, and deeply investing in analytics for that the developers have, which are available via APIs or via the portal. And the analytics, you know, apart from just top-level analytics around you know, user acquisitions and crash reports. And so on. We've also been investing in empowering developers to segment the user base, so that you can do things like look at your user base and go, for my highly monetized users, I'm going to do one set of things. For my less engaged users, I'm going to do another set of things. So once you segment your users, you can then send them notifications or send them targeted offers. We've also been investing in features around empowering AAA game developers. AAA game developers have a unique set of needs. They have very large packages, sure, very large games. They also have the need for a much higher level of secrecy. So, you know, and the protection of their content. So we've invested in encryption of the content and also sandboxing and flighting capabilities for them.
Awesome. So, Dave, right? You are a consumer of both the store sort of and the API. Tell me, what are some of the questions that you get? What's the experience like?
All right. So, when I talk to external developers, I get two halves of kind of one big question. And it really starts with people loving the idea of being able to write an app once and have it run on the existing popular device types and all of the new devices that are coming out and the form factors that are so exciting. But they want to know, is Microsoft really committed, you know, to it first? You know, the second half of that is they want to hear from somebody like me who spends my day, you know, writing those applications on, hey, if I've already done my PC app, but I want to bring it to HoloLens, you know, or I want to bring my app to, you know, Xbox, how hard is it, you know, to add that other device? So on the first one, you know, it's worth looking at our organization within Windows. Because the apps organization, which we call the Windows Experiences part, pretty much the only thing we fund are universal Windows platform applications. And we have a lot that are very popular. Like the Photos application is consistently in the top five most launched applications in all of Windows. You know, it's a universal app, as is the camera app. You know, the Paint 3D things that we announced at the press event in New York, you know, a month ago. You know, that's a universal app. The Groove app for music, movies and TV, you know, the Maps app, you know, even things like Calculator. Like, we have a long, long list. And our team uses the universal apps for mail and calendar from the Outlook team. And they're great applications, so no one should be confused. We are very, very committed, you know, to Universal. In terms of the difficulty, I have been very, very impressed at how low work it is to go to another device class. Now, in some cases, you know, if you have a great PC app, you know, is not totally free. My experience on bringing the Maps application to Xbox, as an example, there was two unique problems. One, you wind up having to deal with TV safe colors, which you don't really think about on non-TV devices, and you have to deal with a game controller, which is a different kind of input mechanism. But they wind up being very small problems in the context of the entire application. When we went to Surface Hub, it was literally free. You know, once we had done the PC and phone app, like, we didn't do anything, and then all of a sudden we have access to like a new set of customers and a new set of data stream. And one last comment I'll bring up on the Maps platform, since we have a Maps platform that we make available to third parties as well, and we have had in the past, we track how fast is the adoption to developers of UWP relative to previous ones like Silverlight, and we are tracking faster than any development platform that we have ever had in the past in terms of companies that are adding location-aware capabilities onto our latest platform. It's been great.
That's awesome. So let's go back to you, Kevin, because I think the promise of building a UWP application and having it work, for example, on HoloLens, on Windows IoT Core, on whatever other thing we come up with, is pretty huge. Tell us about how people are taking advantage of that.
Well, it really is a lot like Dave said. You know, I may start on one device. Not everybody starts out every day saying, I'm going to go and build for everything.
Right.
There's a couple places where you'll say, oh, these are my first ones, where I'm going to go reach my customers, and then you want to add. As you grow your business, you go to more device types.
Sure.
And nobody wants that to be incredibly costly each time. Instead, you build it at the core, and then as you bring it to these other devices, it's incremental cost. And you don't have to retrain, you don't have to relearn, but you do tune. I keep telling people, you do want to tune. If you want the best experience, you'll probably do some tuning, especially on some of these more unique devices. And so I think it really is that value proposition. You can start on any of them, and then move to the one that makes sense for your business. And everyone will kind of pick a different path.
That's awesome. And we saw yesterday, like, you can do some UI testing with Appium. There's this new sort of control that lets you sort of run through and make sure that your UI is working mm-hmm. the way it's supposed to be, which is really
yep.
cool. Now, let's get back to the store. I don't think people realize, like, deploying an application and getting paid for it is a lot harder than it seems. Tell us about how the store sort of really helps reduce that friction. Because, like I said, I built applications a long time ago, and I remember going to buy an installer, and I was like, holy cow, this is, how am I going to get paid for this? And I had to do some weird code things. Tell us about how the store helps you sort of with deploying and monetizing your application.
So, if you look at the life cycle of an application, as a developer, you first build your application, and then you go to the dev center and you ingest your application with us. So there's a series of investments we make there to make sure that the amount of time it takes for you to go from when you submit your application to the application going live is as short as possible. But we also want to make sure that we're protecting the consumer, so we do a fair amount of analysis on your application. Because we want to continue to maintain that value proposition that the store is a safe place for a consumer to go and get an application. And once they get the application, we also want to ensure that the application is current, is easily updatable. Now, that's great value for the developer because they can just rely on us to make sure that, you know, once they give us the application, they can keep giving us updates to the application, and we take care off everything else. But the store also lets developers monetize more effectively. So we are constantly working on ensuring that we have a large enough install base of monetized users. So we're trying, you know, in every possible way to train our users to go to the store for everything they need. And then we're also minimizing the friction needed for them to attach a payment instrument so that we have as many paying users as possible. And once you have a large enough install base of paying users, developers benefit because they can sell applications more effectively. But we also empower developers to reach as many consumers as possible. You can, a developer can book app install ads and actually make their applications visible in other applications. they can also engage their consumers by creating campaigns around their applications.
Awesome. So we're already starting to get some questions. We're going to go to those. Please submit your questions now if you want to get them in, because there's a lot of them here. After playing with Centennial, I figured out it was easy to get my desktop app packed into an Apex, but to really move fully over, they say, is a pain. Do you have to do everything completely at once in order to move to the full UWP?
No, what? You don't actually have to. Okay. You some things you will have to take, a little bit hard to mix and match.
Sure.
But as far as capabilities, you can begin to adopt the platform incrementally. The nice thing is here, you can rewrite them, rewrite pieces or move to new capabilities or take advantage of them as it makes sense for your business. The UI is a little bit more monolithic. It's not easy to mix and match where you move one control over at a time. You sort of have to move a page at a time or a UI set of UI at a time to go build it. And that just makes sense and get all that new capability. Because if you mix them together, sometimes it doesn't look so good. So the UI you'll have to do a little bit more monolithically, but the rest of it is much more incremental.
So what does it look like for someone to use Centennial? Let's just say I have a Battleship WinForms application that I just want to put on the store. How does that sort of happen with Centennial?
So the basic thing, there's a couple ways you can get to an AppX. So first you need to produce an AppX.
Sure.
We have three different ways. One is, two ways. You can use one of the installers. There's Install Shield and Wix, and you can go use those. And now if you get the latest versions of them, they will produce AppXs. And you take the AppX, you submit it to the store, and you can go, and you're off on your way.
Sure.
The other way is, if you have an MSI or some other setup.exe that's kind of custom, you can use a desktop app converter. And what that will do is you run it, the desktop app converter, it'll track everything your installer does and produce an AppX package from it. You may need to tweak it a little bit afterwards, but in most cases, it's pretty complete. And now you can just submit that AppX package to the store. So that's how you get started.
So let me see if I understand. So day zero, I'm like, okay, I want to go in the store. I want to make it easier for my customers to get my application. Day zero, I either run the MSI tool or I use the ones that Wix or Install Shield to make the AppX. Day zero, I do that, I put it out. It goes through a process where it gets accepted, people install. Now that's where the process of saying, okay, I need to start taking advantage of some of the UWP things that come in, right? How do you do that? You mentioned page by page.
So the way it works is in your project. So if I had Visual Studio, it'd be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
You'll have your, in essence, all of your project that is your, Win32 portion of it.
Sure.
And then you start to create a UWP portion. And one of the challenges that we're looking to make easier is they do run slightly in two different in processes or two different threads. And so there's a little bit of work to communicate between them. But in most cases, it's not that bad a deal. I mean, because if you have a background task or something like
sure.
that, those things are already separate. And so now you start building two heads. And so if you go into Windows 7 and Windows 10, you can go build the project once, produce your MSI for Windows 7, and then for Windows 10, you'll do it. It'll build both the UWP piece and it'll build the desktop piece. Combine that into a Centennial package, and you can deploy that to Windows 10.
Okay. And then as you go, as you're building these projects, you can start adding pages to sort of replace your UI, and then you can start wiring them together.
Yeah, I mean, over time now, say you want to go to HoloLens. You move more and more into your UWP piece, and for the HoloLens, you build just the UWP piece and go and deploy that to the store for HoloLens. And that's when, at some point, the UWP piece is the more predominant or larger portion of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's some small part that may give you some legacy capability. You need a user in GDI to go do
sure.
something on the desktop. But the bulk of your app now is a UWP, and it just works everywhere. And you just have a little bit of extra code that when you compile and want to submit to the desktop, you compile that in and submit a Centennial package for the desktop.
So the key message is, day zero, you can put your stuff on the store.
The answer is it's a roadmap where you start by taking the app you've got, and then you can migrate as far as you need to, depending on what devices you want to hit and what capabilities you want to take advantage of. We've tried to make it kind of as smooth as we can. And give us feedback. The reality is, where we're struggling and where it's hard, let us know. And we'll see what we can do to make it better.
Awesome. The next question is, on UWP AAA games, any plans to make it easier for modding within AppX containers? I'm not even sure I understand that question. Maybe you guys can help me out. UWP AAA games, any plans to make easier modding within AppX containers? What do you think that means?
So this is adding support for mods.
What's a mod?
A mod is when another developer wants to add some capability to an existing game.
Okay,
so I as a gamer or game developer own a game, and another developer wants to add something that enhances
the game. Usually I call them cheats. Right. Like, yeah. Unlimited money kind of thing, right?
I mean, so I would say the answer is we don't have anything to announce upon it right now.
Okay.
But it is definitely on our mind.
So I mean, there's two types, though.
Yeah.
Right. I will characterize that. There's the modding where you want to change the binaries. That's the one you kind of talked about,
yeah,
where I'm going to cheat. There are others where I want extensibility.
I
want to add in. The developers planned for extensibility, yeah, planned for someone to add on capabilities. Mm-hmm. There, we're looking at making it so that the store will support concept of add-ons. Being able to modify the binaries is in what we are specifically trying to never allow happen right now.
Yeah, it feels kind of dirty. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
And we block that, and that's a kind of a promise we will not. If the developer planned it, great. But if they did not plan it and someone... it's malware.
It'd be like adding extension, some kind of interface that you allow another developer to implement that they can sort of, like a plugin model, for example.
Right. Exactly.
That would be cool. All right, Dave, I saw your app uses Ink and Dial. Can you talk about that? I mean, this is some interesting kind of interaction that developers have traditionally never dealt with, particularly the Dial, which is brand spanking new. Tell us about how that came about.
Yeah, so fairly early on, Microsoft became committed to Ink. But within our team, we wanted to really look hard and make sure that we were doing something that was more than the obvious. The obvious thing is just to add annotations. And you can have 2D flat annotations. We showed billboard annotations that float in space at the Build conference earlier in the year. And those were both valuable, but we wanted to make it something that would go far beyond that to be genuinely helpful to customers. We talked to a whole bunch of customers, and we landed on two specific things that that really popped for us. One was to have a pen-based directions tool, where if you are using any of the mapping applications or websites outside of Windows Maps, you have to start from a known location and go to a known location, like an address or the name, you know, of a building. But lots of times when you're talking to people, you're like, well, you know, I'm at the intersection of 1st and A Street, and I want to go to 9th and D Street. And being able to go from places that don't have an address, like the middle of that intersection, is something that you can easily do with Ink. You can pick any random point on a map, any other random point, and it will automatically calculate the quickest distance and one or two alternate routes for you to walk or drive or take public transit, you know, from it. So something that you could not really do very easily in the old world. The second thing that we added was a distance tool, where once we started to see our Windows insiders really play around with Ink, then we saw them interacting with other parts of their system that we didn't immediately realize, where it turns out that, like, if you are a Fitbit owner, you go on runs and you get a report back on, like, here's where you ran and how far it was, and you get to see that on a map. And people were starting to plan out their training regime. We're like, well, I went on a 5-mile run yesterday. I want my next run to be 5.5 miles. And so we make it where you can pick your house, go to Green Lake, go around Green Lake, come back to your house, and we'll count it up and say, hey, that was 5.1 miles. And they're like, okay, well, I need it to be a little longer, and so I'll add a tiny little loop, you know, around here. But being able to get those distances at any point, you know, has proven to be very valuable for a set of customers. So we're really excited at being able to help prove, you know, the value of Ink. Surface Dial was tremendously easy for us to integrate after we had already integrated the Ink toolbar, you know, just existed as a universal app. Granted, we got early access to hardware before most of the world, you know, was able
cheaters
to see it.
I didn't say that. I don't know. It was fun.
It's, you know, to be fair, there was a very, very small part of our team,
right,
you know, that knew about it. We had to carry it in this, like, jeweled locked case
I
and go in private rooms.
I would carry it in a jeweled locked case today if I had.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, you know, it's beautiful. It's a great thing because it is changing the input-output model of computing. And between seeing volumetric maps with HoloLens and being able to do, you know, touch and dial or pen and dial at the same time, the big thing that was an interesting problem for us on that was not, you know, the integration with the toolbar to draw the UI. It allowed us to spend most of our time with actual humans on what they need. So an interesting thing that came out both from our app and from other apps is that a lot of the early users, testers, really, of Surface Studio wound up having a music application playing in the background. They'd have Groove or Pandora, you know, or Spotify. And when they were really in a creative zone, they wanted to be able to have control over music, like be able to change the volume or skip a track without having to navigate in between windows. So one of the things that the Windows Maps application did, and a bunch of other applications did, is we decided to pass through the music command and control, you know, on the toolbar, so that, hey, you're in Photoshop, you're in Maps, you're doing whatever thing is creative for you, you don't have to switch back and forth to get your music control. That's just something that you have access to, you know, right away. And customers really liked it a lot more than having keyboard buttons or the other, you know, mechanisms. And so, like, the most interesting thing for me is that it was so easy to do the integration. We could focus more on these things that you don't think of naturally as a Maps app function. You think of it as the whole system on how are we keeping that customer in their creative zone. And it's really been great.
And that's kind of awesome because, I mean, how do you forward these calls to Pandora? I mean, is it like, I'm trying to understand how you did that as a programmer. Because, I mean, we spent some time, you and I, looking at the code, which was super simple. How do you forward these things over?
Like, well, for us, this was simple. We just had to pick up a button that was really a music, you know, button. Mm-hmm. And so it was free for us. We just had to draw the button and pass on the message. And then there's nothing else that we have to do. Some of the buttons that show up, you know, on the Surface Dial menu when you're in Maps are specifically to do Maps things, like change the color of your ink or change the thickness of your ink that you're going to draw. But, you know, this one we pass through and the system takes care of it for us.
So we built into the actual Dial menu the ability to have some of the system controls.
I see.
So you as a developer can choose to put your own custom ones or also keep some of the system ones, because it just is valuable. So sure. The combination, we made that specifically for those system capabilities.
And just imagine the creativity that a developer can now have with Pen, Dial, HoloLens. I mean, there's got to be some tremendous experiences that people are building and will build with this kind of approach.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty excited. All right, so from Hassan, can you tell us about certification in the Windows Store? I mean, am I going to be waiting like a couple of months for you to be like, okay, this is blessed, you know, by Microsoft, it's in the store. How does this work?
So we start with you know, the consumer here. So we want to make sure that the store is a safe place for consumers. That that any application you acquire from the store is, you know, is doesn't have malware or is not malicious in any way. So we do invest in a fair amount of, you know, we do invest a fair amount of energy in validating the application on its way in. But the way we do it is, for developers that are known and high reputation, we want to make sure that their process is low friction and fast, and so they get in really, really fast. For developers or applications that are unknown or you know, if our algorithms, so we invest heavily in ML-based algorithms to look at patterns among, you know, developers or applications to see if there's something that is worthy of our attention. And in those scenarios, those applications get flagged and they get reviewed more deeply, and then we make a decision on those applications. But ultimately, we are biasing towards having a smaller number of higher quality applications, and we're definitely not just shooting for volume in terms of the total number of applications that are right in the store.
I love because if you go for volume, you're going to get all sorts of weird things.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, you could build a filed new application and pass it into the store, and that could be count. And so I really love that. All right, so the next question that I have is about C++. How does C++, CX, and C++ WinRT relate to WP, and what's the difference between them?
So when we, it's a good question. So we have just announced really the ability of a much, much cleaner C++ code. So when we first introduced UWP, and really when we've introduced Windows 8, a new programming model where WinRT, mm-hmm, a calling convention, really, it was kind of different for C++ developers. We had little hats. We had other little syntactical things that really made it hard for developers to share their C++ code,
sure,
which is really the most portable of almost any code
that
out
should
there.
Should be, at least,
is,
yeah,
C++. And so we got very clear that when people had to call, developers had to go call WinRT APIs, they used a syntax that was unnatural. So we went back, talked to a bunch of customers, talked to some stuff that had been done by some people in the industry, and we came up with a new way of doing C++ that has been well received inside the industry, where the C++ community loves it, works well for game developers who are very heavy in C++, but anyone who's using it will feel like it's a much natural way of calling the new APIs, these WinRT APIs. Because nearly all APIs that we now produce, we actually build in WinRT. And the main difference, just I'll reiterate that, is we have the Win32 calling convention, we have COM, we support the ones that were built that way. But any new API, we want to work in C++, C#, JavaScript, we want to work in any language. And WinRT gives us a very easy ability. If you build it to WinRT, you can get access to it from any language.
Awesome. Next question. Does anyone want to add to that? I think that was a good answer. William Bradley says, will we see an adaptive data grid similar to the likes of Groove? I'm sure business app developers would really desire this, and I could see some use cases for this. Are we going to get into the control business?
So definitely we know we have some gaps in our controls. Right, so we've looked at it, we had a basic set that we were happy with, but we really weren't satisfied.
Right, sure.
Developers have been clear saying they want data grids, some data visualization, there's a bunch of other lists of them. So we are one by one going through these and trying to figure out the best way to surface them that will work across all the devices, but also just be incredibly productive for developers. I have nothing to really announce right now, but in the very near future, I think you'll find that we are finding a way to really make sure we move forward the control set so developers have everything they need to build their applications.
I love it. From Tristan, UWP apps is just .exe files and xcopy deployment. Is that possible? That's like a side-loading question, right?
No. Well.
Or maybe I got them backwards.
I have this entire talk track where I talk about what an app model is.
Sure.
And really the app model of Win32 was copy exes and run them.
Yeah.
And that was really not a very good app model because it was hard to update them. You couldn't uninstall very cleanly. Things can be left in many places. So when we introduced UWP, we created what we called the AppX, the file format. And then we built an app model that allowed a cleaner install and uninstall. And that's really the new app model we have. It also allows resource control, allows us to do memory management, CPU, a whole bunch of capabilities with a real app model, with real updating, so I can shut down the app and restart it, those type of things. Or if there's really resources on certain devices, you can only have one or two apps running. So that's the app model we have for UWP. And really when we added Centennial, we took the app model and added it to Win32 applications. That's why we have such high compatibility. We execute it really almost the same as it executed before, but we get all the great deployment benefits of a real app model versus people who pollute the registry and then it expands and grows. Now we have a clean way to install applications. So no, UWP does not just copy exes.
Which is good, right? Because
absolutely is that is
it's good. Like that thing you said in the email, like, hey, just download this and click on it. We don't do that. Yeah. Brenda Stewart asked, does the map app ship via the store? How do users take the updates?
Yeah, it absolutely does ship via the store, and we love shipping via the store. Considering most of my brethren ship on OS trains and call them once a year, 6 months to 15 months, I get to ship as often as I need to, which usually is about once a month. But I've had two cases where I ship three times in the same day, and the tools have gotten good enough that it is now cheap for me to ship that often, which is the big part. And it means that I can be a lot more responsive to feedback loops from customers. We're always watching telemetry to see if anything's going wrong or there's any sort of interactions with anything else. But we have flighting mechanisms that we use, similar to the OS, where we go out to a fast ring and a slow ring and then all customers. But it's very simple for any of our lead developers to basically deploy from their desktop to the store.
And the Dev Center has an API. So one of the things that all first-party applications do now is the build system for the first-party applications is integrated with the Dev Center APIs. So as each version of our first-party app gets built, a flight gets kicked off automatically via the Dev Center API, and that's available to people who can use the flight.
And I should say, that's not just the Maps app. Like, the Photos app is the same way, and the Camera app, and all of our apps heavily use the store. And we've had a close partnership over the last couple of years. So the things that were not available in the store that we really wanted early on, we've been able to work on together and get them to be part of the store system, whether it's a process or a feature.
Awesome. Next question from Mustafa. When will UWP support NetStandard 1.6?
So this is one of those places where I know I, I always have to say, I don't think we did a great job in our .NET support when we did UWP. We took too broad a subset, and one of our goals is to expand that to be make it really easy to share code, whether it's you're sharing it with your desktop application coming from WPF, or whether you're sharing that code with, you know, something that runs on iOS and Android. We want to really support .NET standard in the best way possible inside of UWP. So our goal is really to make that as seamless as possible, as fast as we can.
Awesome. So you mentioned the Dev Center a couple of times. Why don't you describe what the Dev Center is and why it's an important sort of process when you're putting things in the store?
So the Dev Center is the single destination for developers when they want to go and interact with the store. And it's the one place they come in, they onboard with us, they give us their applications, and then that's the same place they come in for looking at their analytics or running their flights or engaging the user base. And also the same place where they get paid. You know, that's the place where they enter the payout information and they can look at their payout status and so on and so forth. The other interesting thing about the Dev Center is most of the functionality that's available in the portal is also available via an API. So for instance, if you have your favorite analytics tool that you want to use to go reason over your analytics, you can just attach to our API, pull in your data, and then reason over it on your own.
That's awesome. So another question I have is, when it comes to monetization, is that something you mentioned that you can see in the Dev Center? Is the only way to monetize your app via having people pay for it? What are some other ways that I can make money off of an application?
So you can make money in multiple ways. You can make money using ads. You can have a freemium model where you can have a free app in the store and then either do in-app purchases or this new thing that we added recently, which is downloadable content, where it's an in-app purchase for something which has a payload associated with it. There's also other creative ways in which people monetize. For instance, they use an affiliate model where there's a lot of stores, including our own store, that gives you a bounty for anything you refer to the store. So an application might be promoting content in other stores, and they monetize by getting a bounty for those promotions.
So when we're talking about the store, I mean, are there specific kind of apps that go in the store, or what kind of apps? If I want to go to the store, what kind of app am I building? Is it for any kind of application?
In general, we are training our users to go to the store for anything. And so I would say any kind of application you want, whether it's a consumer-focused application or a commercial, we even have a business store. So if you have a commercial-focused application or a consumer-focused application, you should bring it to the store. And we are working on ensuring that your app is available in every channel that Microsoft sells through.
Awesome. Next question from Nancy. What improvements have been done in the Dev Center about telemetry and knowing more about my application?
So recently we have, first let's start with the basics. We have been investing in the accuracy and timeliness of our data. So in the past we've had instances where, you know, data has been delayed. Now we have triggers in place where anytime data goes out of SLA, we find out and we act on it and treat it like a live site issue. We've also been adding different kinds of reports. You have app acquisition reports. You have crash reports. Now crash reports have the crash cabs associated with it, so you can actually debug your crashes. We've also invested in a fair amount of segmentation capability so that you can segment your user bases in creative ways and target your offers to those users.
And so there's sort of a lot more telemetry. There's a lot more. You know exactly what's going on when it comes to your app.
We've also added this new thing called real-time reports. So now there's, for some subset of your reports, the data is available in real time. You can watch your acquisitions just sitting at the Dev Center and watching go by. So
that's awesome. All right, from Thomas, we have a really good question, which is fairly specific, but I think it's a good one. When do you plan to bring these typical features for classic line of business apps to UWP? One, native input validation, something like iNotify data error info. Two, support for client server apps, like a UWP app using EF Core to connect to SQL Server. Three, simple deployments similar to QuickOnce or XCopy. This is like a 3-in-1. I love it.
Well, I'll try and answer it more generally and then get a little bit specific on a couple of them. First of all, we definitely care about line of business applications. I know we've talked a lot about user experience and consumer and making the apps great, but I think that's good for a line of business. But then there are all these, you know, very specific things for line of business. We're looking very closely at what those gaps are and trying to close them down and then take the next forward
sure.
to make it even easier and better for our business customers. As far as deployment, really we're not looking at doing an X copy or click once. Like I talked about, like we really think that having a strong app model is the right solution for keeping apps updated. Xcopy won't let you keep apps updated. And if you don't keep your app updated in the modern world, you know, sort of, it's not always the best thing for your users. Or if they have to go do it themselves, none of these things are great experiences. Or wait, like one of the nice things about going in the store is we will update it in the background. You don't have to have launch the app, then it downloads and updates or anything like that, and wait. We will update it in the background. And then the app will just be there for the user. So we provide a lot of great solutions with our app model. And with, you know, one of the things we've done when we talked about some gaming, boy, we have pushed forward our capabilities at deploying. We can deploy large packages, small packages, complex incremental updates. We have all kinds of capabilities through our store, really to meet most needs. And if there's some gaps, I say people go to User Voice, let us know what those gaps are, and we'll try and make sure we do a great job at it.
So if someone's coming from sort of an old school model of building applications, say WinForms or WPF, and they want to go whole hog into the store, what are some key gotchas that people need to be aware about so they can be prepared to sort of make this migration? Is it all XAML?
Well, a couple steps. You can actually get in the store with those apps using
Centennial. Correct. Mm-hmm.
So like, there's almost very few gotchas there that I can come up with.
Right.
That's why I was like a little dumbfounded.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
We've tried to make it so there's not many. You know, if you install a driver, yeah, we're not going to let you do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you know, certain things like that, right. that were just, you know, no kernel mode drivers from the store, bad thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, at least with Centennial, you should be able to bring it over. And then, you know, for as far as UWP, yes, there are, you know, obviously there might be some feature gaps that we need to look at, or if you have some code. But then you can use Centennial to build sort of a hybrid app where you have the UWP using all the modern technology, all the user input and technology capabilities there with XAML, and then maybe using some older code that's really supported on, say, .NET 4.6.
Now, what I'm thinking of is more like Greenfield. Let's just say, like, we want to go whole hog UWP. What should people start learning about in order to do a UWP app correctly? That's really the question. And maybe we'll ask you, since you work on the maps app, what are some key things that you need to sort of understand and sort of work on to be able to build a first-class UWP application?
Really, you should understand the scope of the WinRT APIs. Like, if you are a Win32 developer, you are used to having what I'll call unfettered access, where you could see the entire file system. You could see a lot. And we have a security sandbox that puts you in a space that protects against other apps, and if your app is going to crash, which sometimes happens, particularly in the middle of development, it's not going to impact those other apps. And like, that was maybe the biggest kind of transition that we went through. But for the kind of features that we have wanted to do, like, we have access really to a lot. And in terms of the command and control and the input, like, we are at a point where, it's very mature now. If you went to the very initial launch of Windows 10 a couple of years ago, you would be able to find some things that felt pretty painful that did not exist, in the Universal Windows platform at that time, that, Win32 supported very well. But like Kevin has talked about, many times, like, over the past couple of years, they've been chunking away, at that, to the point where, there's not really a reason not to do it anymore.
Sure. And I think this brings up a really good question from Oliver, to you specifically, Dave. How does your team work with the larger Windows group to provide feedback? It sounds cool that your team both builds a part for Windows, but consumes it as well. There's got to be some times where you're like knocking on their door and be like, hey, look.
Yeah, we have very regular meetings. Like, Kevin has been in multiple meetings where me and a bunch of my applications peers will come in, which tends to have two flavors, where one is more of an education system where we'll say, here's the roadmap that we intend to go on for the next year. Here's a customer segment that we care the most about and what we're doing and why. And then here are the things that we really care most about, from the platform. Because there's always a list of things to do between when you think of like the new exciting devices between Project Scorpio on Xbox, the HoloLens roadmap and all like the third-party devices that are coming on Windows Holographic. Like there's fun stuff coming, and it just makes the list long. And so having us all together like that helps get to a point where you could see here are the trends across applications that are needed the most and help prioritize that most. Part of my role is to not try to squeeze Kevin as much as possible for him to deliver all of my list,
right.
But really to be the front line for the third party developers saying that like, hey, I'm in this. This is my job every single day, and I know that I have more access to Kevin's team than most third-party developers, and so I'm going to give blunt and impolite feedback at every opportunity so he can hear it from what I'll call a friendly source, so he knows what to work on and can put the best foot forward for third-party developers. And like a lot of the things that I think are exciting for both of us are when we are reaching into those new device types, and getting on UWP gives you access to like a whole set of people doing things with volumetric holograms, and being on that wave, it's great to hear that customer feedback early on.
And I love that your focus is building a best-in-class UWP app, and your focus is making sure that you provide the best-in-class support for people that do that. And so we have sort of this ultimate dog fooding going on right now.
There are no device types that I don't support. Like Windows Maps is on IoT, it's on Surface Hub, it's on Xbox, it's on HoloLens. And like that's an important part of the system.
Mesa, you were going to say something, Kevin.
Yeah, first-party apps are also our best dog-fooding clients because they're always pushing the limits in terms of the volume of updates they're pushing through or the audience that they're going to, and they're early adopters to all of our features. So they make the store and the Dev Center better.
Kevin?
Well, it actually is a really good experience. We try to model it the same way we work with third parties, where the same way we have build and these conferences, we actually have little mini sessions where they go and give feedback. We ask them to try to be blunt, and we say yes, no, and it has been the best experience I think for our third party developers to have this relationship working so well.
Absolutely.
Where we do make sure that it happens. It really didn't happen earlier in Microsoft's history, and I think it was one of our weaknesses, and this is now one of our strengths.
Yeah,
awesome. Another question from John, and this is an interesting one. What is the future of WPF compared to UWPs? Will UWP replace WPF at some point?
Well, I mean, we've made it clear that our future investment for UI is in our UWP XAML stack. That is where we're building all the new capabilities. That's what runs across all the new device form factors. That is where we are growing capability and making advances. In some places, we aren't as good as WPF. WPF really went and focused a lot on very specific desktop scenarios. We are looking to close the gap there. Especially around line of business. I think we've heard that one, talked about that a little bit. And we want to go make sure we make sure UWP is a good replacement for WPF. So people and developers, as they go build their applications, they can start with Centennial, and then they can replace the WPF with the XAML and get all the new capabilities that the platform has.
And I'm getting from the back channel, they're saying that the store is also an early adopter of APIs, as itself is a UWP app.
Yes,
the store is a UWP app.
That's right. It's a UWP app. It's an early adopter of our platform. And also, it itself gets updated like a UWP app through the store.
So that's kind of crazy, right? It's like picking yourself up from the bootstraps.
I sort of have this philosophy, I don't know if everybody knows this, is we want all of our shell experiences, our store experiences, first party apps, all to use UWP. Mm-hmm. And what we have is a ring of capability model, mm-hmm. where we have a system capability. So the store can build a UWP, but it has the ability to install apps. Now that other apps do not have that capability,
right.
But parts of our shell and our first party get these special capabilities to do system things, but then can leverage the entire platform themselves. And this is really about us making sure that you can build anything in a UWP, even our own shell and our own system components.
All right, so we have 5 minutes, which is a lot longer than you might think. So I want you to wax eloquent on why you think now is the time to build an investment in UWP. Go ahead, my friend.
For me, the answer is clear that all of the evidence on the table is we are going to have a bunch of new and interesting form factors. Yeah, like all of the press that you see just around HoloLens and Windows Holographic and, you know, competitive devices in that space will lead most people to believe there's a big wave coming. And no developers have won that market yet. And, you know, we have a very healthy business sales for Surface Hub. You know, like it, the set of new devices is new opportunity, and the device classes that allow you to get the most leverage from Windows code that you have today and still get in early on that new opportunity, you know, is the universal Windows platform.
Awesome. Mazur?
Windows 10 has, you know, the install base of Windows 10 overall is growing, and we are training users on Windows 10 to use the store, you know, find every opportunity to go to the store and engage. And then we're once they're in the store, we are optimizing the overall funnel, you know, the funnel that goes from a user knowing about the store to a user being engaged with the store and actually monetizing. So we do expect that the store will be the primary channel through which users will acquire apps and games. And, you know, as the store is growing and as our install base is growing, developers who engage in this ecosystem and with the store will benefit.
Awesome. Kevin, you have like 2 minutes.
So I'm going to add a little bit to what Dave said there. It's not only the ability to go and reach these devices, which really is the new field. I mean, there's a lot of saturation in some of the high volume segments.
Sure, sure.
And these new devices are where you can make new money. But it's really, you can also build now the best of breed applications on each of the devices. You can build the best of breed desktop application, best of breed Xbox application. You can build stuff that is great on the high volume, mm-hmm. as well as reaching out and sharing a code as you want to go build for these unique device form factors, which we think is where developers will make money in the future. So I think you can kind of do both. And I think as a Windows, you've tried to strike that balance and give the capability to differentiate as well as the ability to share a significant amount of your code. And we're on this ride to invent new form factors. And I've seen some of the cool stuff out there. And, you know, cool. It's awesome. There's going to be a great world. I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, just the idea of these new form factors, like when you showed me the dial the first time, I was like, wait a minute. Holy cow. It knows where it is on your screen, right?
Yeah,
and together with all the events that you get from it, there's some really interesting things that you can do. I guess it's an exciting time to be a UWP app developer.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right, so we are about out of time here for this one. Are we ready back there to get some more people in here? She said yes. Golan's in the back. By the way, Golan's in the back is just an amazing person. She is literally getting all the dials and pushing all the buttons. Let's get some people in here for the next session.
Thanks.
Thank you.